Testing, testing.
Ben Stern and Leah Heitfeld are roommates. I'm going to try that again. Ben Stern and Leah Heitfeld are roommates. Ben and Leah live together in Berkeley, California, and they are close. They have dinner together almost every night. They regularly talk about history and current events. They often watch TV together in the evenings, and they share a passion for snacking on herring salad on crackers. Also, Ben is a 95-year-old survivor of the Holocaust. He survived the ghettos, death marches, and 9 different concentration camps. Out of his entire family, he was the sole survivor. And Leah is a 31-year-old German graduate student whose grandparents were active and unrepentant members of the Nazi Party. Ben invited Leah into his home. He viewed this as, quote, an act of justice. It was the right thing to do, he says. I'm doing the opposite of what they did. Now, there's more to Ben and Leah's story, of course, but we're going to leave them where they are for the moment, pleasantly rooming together in Berkeley in 2017, and travel back to 1933, where when the Humanist Manifesto, later to become the first Humanist Manifesto after versions 2 and 3 were created, was published. The Humanist Manifesto, with 34 signatories, including several Unitarian ministers, was pioneering. It laid out the framework for a religious perspective that was grounded in reason, science, and the human experience. Key tenets of the manifesto included, as Unitarian Universalist minister William Murray writes, the rejection of a supernatural deity held that the natural universe is all that there is and regard human beings as a part of nature. It argued that we must be focused on the here and now, that there was no afterlife waiting for us, no deeds or actions we should be taking to earn the favor of a god or a place in heaven. It argued, with an atheist position, that with our focus on the here and now and with no god out there to make things better for us, that it was on human beings to make the world a better place. The document referred to its creators and adherents as religious humanists, a designation that was dropped in later versions. And the original authors, interestingly self-identified as religious humanists, were also looking to create a religious perspective that was free of the traditional language, religious language, and trappings. Now, I'm going to try and run through quite a bit of history in the next few minutes to bring us back to the present without attempting to recreate multiple history books. So, if you feel like I've glossed over too much or are interested in more details, there are some great resources out there. Bill Schultz, former president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, or UUA for short, he wrote Making the Manifesto, The Birth of Religious Humanism. And William Murray, who I quoted earlier, has 2 terrific books on the topic. So, that being said, here's the short version of what happened with the interaction between religious humanism and Unitarian Universalism. Religious humanism, slowly but surely, ended up taking over and becoming the dominant theological perspective in Unitarian Universalism. It had to wait to be able to do this, of course, for the Unitarians and the Universalists to merge in 1961. But if you went to a UU church post-merger in the 70s or 80s, and even some of the 90s, you were likely to encounter a healthy dose of religious humanism, including their original intent of doing away with religious language. There continued, of course, to be a variety of theologies within Unitarian Universalism. There were still UU churches that identified as Christian or on the more theistic side of things. But on the whole, a majority of UU churches identified strongly with and practiced as religious humanists in the original sense of that term. This was the church that I grew up in for sure. No mention or usage on Sunday mornings of the words God, sacred, holy, faith, or amen, to name a few. And so it was one fine Sunday morning when we had just called a new minister to her first settlement. Some of you may have heard of her, Reverend Victoria Safford. So it was that when Victoria said Amen during her very first service as our minister, I marched my 11-year-old self right up to her afterwards and, trying to be helpful, of course, said, "Just so you know, we don't say that word here." Sometime in the late 90s or early 2000s, there came to be an increasing sense among many Unitarian Universalists that the lack of spiritual and religious terminology was also creating a feeling for many of a lack of spirituality. And while words like holy and sacred are certainly not required to talk about spirituality, there was enough of a concern that the president of the UUA in 2003, Reverend Bill Sinkford, delivered a controversial sermon to the First Jefferson Unitarian Universalist Church, in which he called upon Unitarian Universalism to reclaim a language of reverence. Now, I encourage you to read the sermon in its entirety, but its essence was a call to reintegrate the language of the sacred and holy. A language of reverence. This, by and large, has happened. There are still some UU churches and congregations that remain almost entirely what has come to be called secular humanist, where they abstain from the use of religious words. And while, of course, there were UU churches that never stopped using this language, the majority, as I understand it, do so now. Our own church is an example of this evolution. Back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, despite our origins as a Christian universalist church, we were very much what we would now call secular humanist. And we've gradually shifted, much to the discomfort of some of our members and friends who still identify as secular humanist, towards using more spiritual and religious language. Indeed, our mission statement, voted into effect 2 years ago by a unanimous vote with two abstentions, is exploring faith, practicing inclusivity, living justice. Here's the thing, though. Though the scales may have tipped towards Unitarian Universalism as a whole, embracing more of a language of reverence, a vast majority of the original ideas put forth in the Humanist Manifesto have become the ground upon which we Unitarian Universalists walk, the water in which we swim. The old joke goes, ask a fish about water, and the answer is likely going to be, huh? Because we typically don't pay attention to those things which are so natural a part of life as the water we swim in, or for humans, the air we breathe. And so many of the ideas of humanism have become the water we Unitarian Universalists swim in, the very air that we breathe. The rejection of a supernatural deity? Check. Certainly, UUs who identify as atheists don't believe in a supernatural deity, and as far as I can tell, most of our theists don't either. While there's certainly a full diversity of beliefs in every area in our congregation, in our congregations, it's probably fair to say that most of our theists hold a more naturalist view of divinity, whereby however they understand God or the divine, it is typically in some form that which is nature. Similar to the Hindu concept of Brahman, where God, Brahman, simply is the universe and everything. The Humanist Manifesto also argued that we must be focused on the here and now, and indeed modern-day Unitarian Universalism takes that as one of its basic tenets. And the idea that if the world is going to get better, it's on us human beings to make it better, a central Unitarian Universalist principle through and through. We may not be atheist on the whole, and we may use some religious language, but so many of the basic principles of the original Humanist Manifesto have become what Unitarian Universalism is all about. So much so that it's possible that many of us are humanists through and through and may not have even realized it. Indeed, I myself had forgotten how much we owe to our humanist roots prior to my doing research for this month's theme of humanism, despite having read much of this material before. Because it's the water I swim in. Having been raised Unitarian Universalist myself, I take these understandings for granted, as a given. Now, the language of reverence issue is a worthy one, with disagreement within our own congregation and within Unitarian Universalism. It is so worthy, in fact, that it truly deserves its own sermon to even begin to properly address. What I want us to look at today, though, is this. If so much of humanism has become the water we Unitarian Universalists swim in, if it has in so many ways become the air that we breathe, what does humanism have to offer us in terms of growth and challenge? We've explored how humanism has led us to the present. Where and how does humanism lead us Unitarian Universalists into the future? What's next? As you might have guessed, I have a few ideas to suggest as possible answers to this question. And specifically, I want to look at where humanism is calling us forward in terms of deeper meaning. We've had a tendency over the years to attract educated, fairly well-off white people to our congregations. What I want to know and wrestle with is, what is the humanist message of hope that matters not only to those of us who are financially comfortable, but also to those of us who are less financially secure? In other words, if I struggle to put food on the table every day, what message of hope does humanism have to offer me? You might have your own answers, of course, but I'm going to suggest three for us to consider today. Worthiness, empowerment, and togetherness. Let's start with worthiness. Our first Unitarian Universalist principle states that we affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And the key word here is inherent. You don't have to earn your worth and dignity, it's just there. If you screw up and make a mistake, even a really big mistake, inherent worth and dignity, still there. Make some really bad choices, do things that are harmful to other human beings. We'll hold you accountable and responsible for your actions, for sure. And bad behavior, no matter how harmful, does not diminish, reduce, or eliminate inherent worth and dignity. This can be hard for us to swallow sometimes, for some of us, when we reach the extremes of bad behavior, when we look at actions that horrify the mind and spirit. Hitler and the Nazis is a common counterexample that's lifted up. But inherent worth and dignity wouldn't be a belief worth holding to, if it didn't challenge us to love and live more deeply. Shame researcher Brené Brown identifies worthiness as the antidote to shame. Shame tells us as a human being that we're no good. It tells you that you're no good, that you're worthless, that you're never enough. Humanism tells us that human beings have inherent worth and dignity, and so worthiness tells us that we're always enough. We're always good enough, just the way we are, mistakes and all, with all our bad choices and harmful actions. Humanism tells us we have worth, we have value, we are loved, just the way we are. Humanism tells us all other humans have worth and are worthy of love, compassion, and forgiveness, no matter how many mistakes they make, no matter how bad their behavior. Worthiness is a humanist message of hope. Each of us has inherent worth and dignity. Humanism also tells us that we're empowered, that it's up to us to make a difference. Most of us are likely familiar with a quote usually attributed to Gandhi, urging us to be the change you wish to see in the world. What is less widely known, though, is that while Gandhi said something similar, he never actually said, be the change you wish to see. The closest passage we have on record from him states, if we could change ourselves, the tendencies in the world would also change. As a man changes his own nature, so does the attitude of the world change towards him. We need not wait to see what others do. So the sentiment he expresses is similar, right, to the pithy bumper sticker, coffee mug, refrigerator magnet quote, but the challenge is a bit more nuanced. We have the power and a responsibility to manage how we choose to respond to the world. There is a freedom and an empowerment in this choice. We are not stuck acting out of and responding from our current way of being. We have the ability, Gandhi suggests and humanism endorses, we have the ability and the responsibility to take charge of how we respond to and engage with the world. And beyond the empowerment of personal change, the bumper sticker quote exists for a reason. Be the change you wish to see in the world could easily be a humanist slogan. Humanism emphasizes human agency, the human ability to act to make a difference. It recognizes, names, and honors the tremendous power every single one of us has to transform our lives and the world. Power that most of us don't fully claim or use in our lifetimes, which is why Be the Change often appeals to us. Of course, humanism is also aware of human structures of oppression and control and doesn't make the assumption that everyone has equal access to power. It recognizes that oppression and systemic injustices leave some of us with fewer options, a narrower range of choices, and less power than what is available to those born with privilege, while still lifting up our agency, our ability to create and enact change. Empowerment, a grounded empowerment that recognizes but is not deterred by systemic injustice, is a humanist message of hope. We can change our own lives. We can make a difference in the world. Finally, humanism offers us togetherness. It acknowledges that we do not exist in isolation. Humanism offers a togetherness that tells us we are not alone, that we do not have to face life's difficulties alone. That when we're struggling, not only is it okay to reach out for and ask for help, but there will be a hand waiting there to grasp ours. And humanism offers a togetherness that tells us that as important as empowerment is, that as much power as we might claim for ourselves, we can only truly transform the world when we work with each other. There's a pretty decent chance that if Gandhi had actually said, "Be the change you wish to see in the world," then he might have said it something like this: "Be the change you want to see in the world and organize to make it happen." Because Gandhi was also a firm believer in the fact that you can't change the world by yourself. We need other people. His entire life's work was about making himself the best he could be, helping others be the best they could be, and helping them organize together to create change. Humanism likewise tells us that being together matters and can make a difference in our lives and in the world. Togetherness is a humanist message of hope. We are not alone, and together we can change the world. Humanism has done vitally important work in the world and in Unitarian Universalism. We owe much to those original drafters of the first Humanist Manifesto. Many of humanism's major tenets have become the grounding, the framework, the basic life and ethical and theological orientation for Unitarian Universalism. They are the water in which we swim, the air which we breathe. Humanism has brought us to our Unitarian Universalist present. And it has at least three messages of hope to help lead us forward. We are worthy, we are empowered, we are together. We began today with the story of Ben and Leah. Ben, the 95-year-old Holocaust concentration camp survivor. Leah, the 31-year-old granddaughter of unrepentant Nazis, who Ben invited to be his roommate. In that decision Ben made, we can see all of these qualities of hope. Ben saw and trusted in Leah's inherent worth and dignity, despite the actions of her grandparents. He was empowered and made a choice where others might have chose differently. Ben made a choice to do the opposite of what the Nazis did, to respond to the hate and violence inflicted on him and his family with love. And Ben, who chose togetherness in connection with another human being, a human being who now enriches his life. It was a remarkable choice, a great and uplifting story. And as remarkable as they are, Ben and Leah are just one example of this same story repeated day after day in so many homes and communities across our country and across the world. Yes, there is much wrong in the world today, and yes, we human beings have caused most, if not all of it. And humanism offers us a reason to be hopeful. We affirm worthiness, our own and that of others. We are empowered to make changes in our own lives and in the world. We come together so that we need not face life's challenges alone and to multiply our power to make a transformative difference. Humanism offers us worthiness, empowerment, and togetherness as a message of hope. Human beings live, breathe, and create that hope with their choices, our choices, every day. May we take that message of hope and continue to live it into being in the world. May you live worthiness and empowerment and togetherness into being. Amen.